The Huskers Radio Network Broadcast Center is sponsored by Acres, the Midwest premier John Deere dealer, supplying the equipment and service to advance agriculture and much more. Acres, solutions for every field. Closing out the show here on a Wednesday night, we finish things off with an interview Nick Handley had with ESPN's Dan Murphy a couple weeks ago to cover the House settlement and what it all means for the future of college sports. Nick started by asking Dan what his reaction was to the settlement being finalized.
Yeah, it is funny to reflect on it in sort of the long-term view. If you had told someone 5 or 6 years ago that schools are going to be cutting checks directly to their athletes by the time 2025 rolls around, I think you'd get a lot of laughs, right? So in that sense, we've come a long way in a short distance. If you look at it on a slightly different scale, we've been waiting for this to get into place for the better part of a year, a little bit more than a year since the terms of this deal were first announced. But it is, you know, in the grand scope of college sports, this is one of the biggest changes in the 100+ years that the NCAA has been around, that schools are now going to be paying athletes directly, and they're going to be trying to wrestle back some of the control that they lost during the NIL era that lasted about 4 years.
And that's where I wanted to start. First and foremost, I think when people think of, okay, well, this is just more money that's going into student athletes' pockets, what type of guardrails will there be? How does that impact name, image, likeness? It seems like, and we've heard a lot of coaches in the last 72 hours really speak up about this, that they're actually excited that this will allow, with that clearinghouse, some type of guardrails. What can you tell us just how that's going to work?
So in the minds of a lot of the people leading college sports, this was step one of a two-step process in getting back control of basically being able to make rules and, more importantly, being able to enforce those rules, which, whether it's the transfer market or NILs or any of the main market for acquiring better athletes, they haven't had control over that for at least the past 4 years. And so step two of that process, now that they've got the settlement done, is going to federal lawmakers in Congress and saying, listen, we've done what we can to do more for athletes. We're serious about acknowledging the reality that we're living in, that this is a business, but now we need your help to be able to put some rules in place. We don't want athletes to be employees of their schools, because that comes with a whole, Pandora's box full of other problems that for us to solve. Can you help us out with this, a new law that's going to be able to allow us to make these rules without another onslaught of lawsuits coming at us like we've been trying to deal with for the past 10 years? And so, you know, we'll see. You know, it's anybody's bet whether Congress agrees with them, and if they agree with them, whether they're actually able to get anything done are big open questions. But that's really the overarching picture of how the NCAA sees this moving forward.
I know you've been given this question many, many times. I know we have asked this question many times. It doesn't seem like there's any true clarity as far as, and again, things in the courtroom that will probably follow this, especially how it impacts Title IX. How do you best understand how revenue share and Title IX collide at all, if at all, I should say?
Yeah. So every school has a big pot of money. About $20.5 million is where it's going to start next year. And each school has to decide how they're going to split that money up between their players. And so it remains an open question whether or not that money, which is for NIL deals, like the school will be paying the athletes to use the athlete's name and image in promotions for the school, does that apply to Title IX? So the Title IX law says that every school has to give men and women equal opportunities for educational experiences. And they've long decided that sports are part of that educational experience package, where women and men have to have the same chance to learn on the field or on the court. Does getting paid fall into that? It really depends on who you ask, right? Title IX lawyers would tell you, absolutely, this is part of the deal here. The administration under President Biden thought Title IX should apply to this money. President Trump's administration pulled that back and said, no, that's not really the way we see that federal law. Right now, most schools are planning to pay considerably more money to their football teams and men's basketball teams than they are to all their women's sports. Something like a 9-to-1 ratio is the number that we hear most frequently. And so, you know, we're gonna find out, because somebody is eventually gonna file a lawsuit saying this isn't fair. Women need an equal cut of this money, and eventually a judge is probably gonna have to decide one way or another how Title IX applies to this new pot of money that's now available to athletes.
Talking with Dan Murphy of ESPN, he is all over the House settlement, how it impacts college athletics and what's ahead still to come. That's the thing that I'm interested as well, Dan. And I want to start with the NCAA. We know that, as maybe the best way to put it is, the NCAA, and we kind of talked about this here earlier, that they've taken some L's in the courtroom when it comes to being sued in these lawsuits, and that's where we find ourselves now in this situation. But would it behoove the NCAA to, as I feel like they have in the past, really lean up against Congress and lawmakers to try to keep these student athletes from becoming employees and really lobby for that? Because it seems like that might be the one, if there's a win to be had in the courtroom, it would be that for the NCAA.
I think that's right. And I think one way to view this settlement is sort of the NCAA retreating, ceding some ground so that they can put up a stronger fight against the employment question. Right? They strategically gave up some ground here. This was a very expensive settlement, will be a very expensive settlement over the course of the next 10 years. They gave up part of the ground that they never wanted to, which is schools paying athletes directly. That was antithetical to anybody who worked in college sports just a few years ago. But they decided by retreating in that way, maybe they can put up a better fight against the idea that these guys are all employees. And, you know, that's a scary concept for a lot of schools, especially the smaller schools that may have a hard time coming up with the type of money, even to pay all of their athletes minimum wage or all the other workers' compensation benefits and taxes and different things that come along with employee status. And so that's what they're fighting against. And part of the issue here always goes back to treating the Division II and Division III schools or even smaller Division I schools the same way that you treat the 50, 60, 70 richest schools in the country, mm-hmm. and trying to put them under the same set of rules. That's changing a little bit. That's continues to evolve. But right now, the employment question, I think, is the biggest unanswered piece of this moving forward.
And Dan, what's also interesting about a lot of this is when we think of the student athletes having more say than they ever have more earning power than they've ever had while playing a sport, we know that's true. But we also know that as this thing has modernized, it continues to find new heights, in my opinion. And it's funny, the reason I bring up the Kane Coulter and the unionizing thing is because we think of a world where there could be collective bargaining for these student athletes if they are in fact employees. And but it there also seems to be a world that if there was something to be said about that, one of the coaches' biggest headaches right now is roster management. Well, if you had collective bargaining type of format, or at least that opportunity for student athletes, I would think that the schools and these teams, especially the football programs, would have a chance to also say, okay, well, if we're going to do that, we're also going to hold you to your signing of this team. And you're not going to be able just to leave after 1 year unless there are some type of really extraordinary circumstances.
There are a lot of big time coaches in football and basketball specifically that agree with you, that I think would love to see a collective bargaining agreement and be able to draw up contracts with players that are a little bit more ironclad. Right now, because of the way they're structuring these contracts that are in practice, they're employment contracts, but they don't want to call athletes employees. So they have to paper the deal in such a way that it makes it really easy for the athlete to get out of it and change and go to a different school. That's going to get a little bit harder now that schools themselves are drawing up those contracts. The schools are getting a little bit more aggressive with putting buyout clauses and other kinds of things in players' deals. And that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out legally too. But yeah, I think it's a very real possibility that the next battle on this front is collective bargaining, whether that's players becoming employees and being able to formally unionize, or whether there's some sort of middle ground. If Congress is going to step in here, there are a few people I know of on Capitol Hill that are interested in saying, well, let's see if we can. Normally, you need to be an employee in order to form a union and collectively bargain. That's how most pro sports do it. But maybe there's a lane of Congress to say, hey, we'll carve out a special exception where we'll allow these guys to collectively bargain a deal without actually being technically employees. Mm. But, right now, the NCAA is trying to put a stop to that, and players and their advocates are trying to use this as more of a launching pad for the next step in professionalizing college sports.
You know, this is interesting, too, when we think of what was signed on Friday by Judge Claudia Wilken. I know she was also the one who oversaw the O'Bannon settlement in that case, that lawsuit. And it seems like, Dan, and you've been on this from day one, going all the way back to that when it comes to antitrust laws and everything that's been going on with the NCAA to where we got here. It's interesting that she's been really in the middle of a lot of that, but I'm curious, when you go back to the O'Bannon settlement and that case, did you ever think that we would get here so fast as we have?
No, probably not, right? The fact that we're here at all is really interesting. And you think back to if they could do it over again and reverse time back to 2014 and 2015 when all that was going down, if the NCAA had ceded a little ground then and retreated and allowed NIL, but still was able to put a little bit more regulation around it before the next lawsuit came and the lawsuit after that came, then we might be in a very different reality where the leaders of college sports still had a little bit more control, even if athletes were making NIL money. I think they realized they made a huge mistake back then by not ceding a little ground and stepping into reality a little bit further. And I think a big part of why they're settling this case is because they don't want to repeat that mistake again. But yeah, to get back to your original question, no, this is a major, major change that I don't think most people who cover this or are involved in college sports saw as a possibility even 2 or 3 years ago, let alone 10 or 11 years ago.
Dan, I want to end on this. I know that this is a larger question as far as the scope of all of this, of who truly does profit off this. When I say who, meaning schools, and it does seem like this is a rich get richer type of situation. But in particular, a school like Nebraska that has all the resources, that has been out in the foreground when it comes to going all the way back to name, image, likeness. They had a good model in place. They have been ready to pivot it as soon as this thing was signed when it comes to revenue share. We'll see how that's all divvied up, and obviously that remains to be seen. But schools like Nebraska, and this is more of a football question, that have the resources, that are looking to get back into that driver's seat, say, in an expanded college football playoff. Are it the schools like the Miamis, the Florida States, the Nebraskas, that are maybe playing a little bit catch-up? I know Nebraska's playing a little bit more catch-up than Miami and Florida State right now when it comes to the success in the field. But do you see this system really benefiting schools like that, that have that infrastructure in place, and this could be maybe the missing ingredient that allows them to acquire that type of roster that can help them be more at that championship level, or at least back into that playoff contention?
I think you need two major elements. One of them is the deep pockets that a program like Nebraska has, and the other is you need leadership who is willing to lean into this and embrace it quickly. I think we saw that when NIL changed. There were a few schools that immediately jumped on it and said, we're going to push the envelope. We're going to do everything the rules allow us to do. There's still a little bit of gray area in how you can be creative and find loopholes to add money on top of that $20 million that's going to be coming straight from the school. There'll be ways where schools can help move money from boosters' pockets into players' pockets, and the schools who are more aggressive about pushing those rules are going to find advantages in that gray space. And so you need both the money and you need the aggressive attitude to take advantage of the current system right now.
It's Dan Murphy with ESPN. Some fantastic work on everything from leading up to Friday's settlement signing to where we are now. I'm sure there'll be stories to follow as we find out a little bit more about how this is going to look, how things are going to be distributed throughout schools. I know your work is not done on this, but Dan, always appreciate your time and explaining this better than any of us could as well. And hopefully you get a little downtime here during the summer before all this, I'm sure, will ramp right back up.
Oh, we've had downtime for the past month or two waiting on this ruling. Now it's time to cook, and I'm excited about it. This, finally, things are moving forward. So it'll be a fun summer, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it again soon.
Great stuff, Dan. You do such good work on this. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
ESPN's Dan Murphy with Nick Handley about a month ago on Sports Nightly. Woodhouse has been a trusted partner in your everyday since 1975. Shop for your next vehicle with the home team at Woodhouse and the official auto dealer of Nebraska Athletics. That's it for Sports Nightly tonight. In case you missed it, this whole week we're running best of shows as we're in the middle of moving our equipment to a new studio. Tomorrow will be another game replay, the Big Ten Baseball Tournament Championship game between Nebraska and UCLA. Hope you can join us then. Thanks for listening to this best of show tonight. Have a great evening.
Hit us up on the text line. Text 402-413-2400 with your Husker thoughts.